Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the BC. It is Saturday,
September 29th, Anno Domini 2012.
And you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And for the next 2 hours, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes. It's going to be a doozy. So let's start with our news of the week for the poll. Please. The tug-of-war is only going to get more intense. Wireless carriers are betting they can pull bills even higher by offering faster speeds on expensive new networks and new usage-based data plans. Oh, there's a surprise. Usage-based data plans will cost us more? Unbelievable. The effort will test the limits of consumer spending as the draw of new technology competes with cell phone owners' more rudimentary needs and desires. So far, telecom is winning. Labor Department data released Tuesday show spending on phone services rose more than 4% last year, the fastest rate since 2005. During and after the recession, consumers cut back broadly on their spending. But as more people paid up to $200, $200 smartphones and bills that run around $100 a month, the average household's annual spending on telephone services rose to $1,226 in 2011. From $1,110 in 2007 when Apple's iPhone first appeared. Families with more than one smartphone are already paying much more than the average, sometimes more than $4,000 a year, easily eclipsing what they pay for cable TV and home internet. The trend has been a boon for companies like Verizon Wireless and AT&T. 74% of U.S. carriers brought in U.S. carriers, wireless carriers brought in $22 billion in revenue selling services such as mobile email and web browsing in 2007, according to analysts. By 2011, data revenue had jumped to $59 billion, that's billion with a B, American dollars. By 2017, USB expects carriers to be pulling in an additional $50 billion dollars a year. But the question for the industry is how much bigger bills can get before the cuts in other parts of the family budget grow too painful. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is this: my monthly phone bill. And the choices are, is a ridiculously huge portion of my monthly expenses, costs more than I would like, isn't so bad really, and you pay for your phone? So far, we have 34 votes, and costs more than I would like is number one, followed by it's not so bad, really, followed by is a ridiculously huge portion of my monthly expenses, and then only five people are shocked that we pay for our phones. Now, when you're done with that, I know you will have more to say, so check the yellow box underneath the poll. Click on Give Us Your Opinion. It will take you to my website, AskNick.com.
That's AskNick.com.
And you can leave your opinion. So far, people don't like the Reagan plan to give free phones to people, but I suppose that's their choice. And of course, the question actually is, what portion of your monthly budget is your phone bill? And of course, that's our question to you. So it took you long enough. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll-free, 1-800-790-0415. Yeah, you're doing great today so far.
Well, they did some major tweaking here. So
yeah, they did.
I'm just kind of playing around with the knobs, and I'm going to have to do it all throughout the show to kind of tweak things so we don't blow people's eardrums out. But it is a lot better.
Yeah.
So bear with me for a few minutes. I'm getting there.
Yeah, I got an interesting email this week from my local internet service provider, offering me free phone for a year.
Wow!
Because of my, I'm a valued, loyal customer for however many years
How
I've been.
For you.
It strikes me as spam. because I know the local internet and cable television company, and they usually don't give you loyalty rewards. Only new customers get the super big discount. So I'm, right. I got to so dig deep into this real. And see what it really is.
Yep.
But I've been thinking about switching over to Magic Jack for phone service. $20 a year for unlimited North America.
Yeah.
Is pretty cool. Yeah. And then even the voice over IP services from your cable company or something like Vonage, flat rates at $20 a month is pretty good. And my wife has friends in Java and Baldwinsville, so we have a fairly large phone bill. Right. Although interesting, the one friend has got one of the unlimited New York plans, and so she always calls us.
Right, my wife and my sister-in-law, who lives in Arizona, talk every day for an hour at a time. Luckily, we're on Verizon, which Verizon is free. We took a train this week. Tuesday night, we took the train to Rockford, Illinois. Thursday night, we took the train back, and my beloved wife did Castleville, all the way there and back on my cell phone, and it's we have unlimited data, so yep. that was not a problem. I created a little hotspot, which is legal, because the government told Verizon that it had to be legal, so I felt okay in doing it. And a half a dozen times, people would say would be walking by, they see my wife, and they'd say, "There's Wi-Fi in this train?" And she would say, "No, my husband has created a hotspot for me." And the answer was invariably the same. The women would go, "Aww," and the men would go, "Huh."
Yep.
I don't understand either of those reactions, except I suppose for many people, doing that would cost them a fortune in data fees.
That grandfathered unlimited plan is pretty amazing. We've been hearing some interesting stories on the iPhone 5 and Verizon that they are canceling the unlimited data plans when you upgrade to an iPhone 5 because it's an LTE phone.
Right.
That's a different data plan. You can't get your unlimited 3G plan brought over to a 4G phone.
Right. Well, we did it before the plans went into effect.
Yeah.
And we went there, and I specifically asked them, I said, "Look, if we transfer one phone now, do we get unlimited for everybody on 4G LTE, or is it only that one person?" She said, "No, the plan is the plan. So if one person gets it, everybody gets it. So you should be good." I said, "Okay, let's do it." And so then when I went to get my phone, I was firmly convinced that they were going to tell me that the previous person had been mistaken.
Yep. But that plan is no longer available.
Yep. Apparently that person was not, which was kind of nice. And so we still have unlimited. So until we change our plan or buy a new phone at the discount.
Yep.
I can buy a new phone anytime I want. But if I buy it at the discount,
yeah,
then it will change my plan.
And then I also wonder about the landline companies offering discounts on phones, because so many people are getting rid of their landlines in favor of their cell phone. Because that's the other thing with phone bills. You've got your cell phone bill. You've got a landline bill. You might have three or four cell phones on a family plan.
Yep.
That all added up together cost more than a single landline. But you want your cell phone more than the landline. So we're probably seeing more and more people killing landlines.
Well, I don't know. I honestly don't know any student of mine who has a landline. I actually took a poll in my classes. Nobody raised their hand. Not one of them has a landline.
Yeah.
They've never felt the need for one. They've grown up not needing one.
Ask them if they know what a rotary dial is.
Yeah.
And you always wanted a phone number with low digits so you didn't have to wait for the nines and the eights or God forbid, a zero to come around.
Right. Right. So, yeah, it was interesting to think about that. These kids don't. They know what they can do unlimited. You know, almost every plan still offers unlimited texting and unlimited voice, but charge you for data, which is kind of ridiculous since it's all data anyway.
Yeah.
What we all need, is for somebody to come up with a way to disguise data as voice or disguise data as text messages.
Yep. Well, Skype, VoIP, that's all data.
But it is all data, but it's not disguised as a voice call.
Yeah.
So if I've got unlimited voice and I actually use that for data, then I win.
Yep.
But I don't know that that's even doable, much less that anybody's done it. But that will cause quite the revolution. And I get it. Look, I get it. The phone companies are not in business to make my life easier and cheaper. They're in business to make money, and they're doing that. And God bless them. That's what they're for. So I'm not saying that they're in any way inherently evil or you know, bad in any way. I get it. They're doing what they do because that's what they do. It just inconveniences me is how that works.
And some of it is inertia. In the olden days, you picked up your phone and asked an operator to connect the call for you. Right. And so we're in the olden days of cellular data.
Right.
You know, in another 5 or 10 years, it's probably going to be unlimited everything anytime, and no one's going to even think about it.
Well, you remember that would be nice, but I don't see it happening in the current climate.
Yeah. You remember, even cell phones used to be limited to a certain city. So right. If I wanted to call Buffalo, that was long distance on my cell phone.
Right.
And after a few years, all the carriers went to nationwide calling. So, you know, your wife can call her sister halfway across the country, and it's still a local call.
We'll see. You know, a couple of companies have said they're going back to unlimited data. Sprint is doing it. T-Mobile is doing it. And we'll see if...
And as the smaller companies, that's how they're differentiating themselves.
Right. Well, and what we'll see is if, in fact, they, over the next couple of years, because it'll take that long for people to play out their current plans, if over the next couple of years we actually see people moving away from Verizon, AT&T, Sprint, and going to these smaller companies that offer unlimited data. If we see that, if the big companies begin to realize they're actually losing customers, they'll go back to unlimited data. But until that happens, yeah, you won't see that. Did not see that. So we'll see. It's an interesting situation. The needs of the individual over the needs of the corporation. And right now, of course, the corporation is winning.
You're channeling your inner Spock?
I am. The needs of the many over the needs of the few.
Or the one.
Or the one, right. But yeah, so I don't know. I don't know if you're interested in this. Give us a call and talk about it. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free. 1-800-790-0415. Like I said, I don't really have a dog in this hunt because I do have unlimited, at least as long as the grandfathering is allowed. And if that ever goes away, well, then I'll go and look at some other companies and see what my options are. Certainly that would be a choice I'd make. I am beginning to use Google Voice more and more. And there are a couple of devices out there that let you use Google Voice essentially as your home phone.
Yep.
That's certainly and right now at least Google's not charging for that. So.
Yeah. Last year when they announced that it was going to be free through the end of the year.
Right.
Well, the end of last year they said, oh, okay, it's going to be free for the end of next year.
Right.
So we'll see what happens at the end of this year.
Right. Right. There's an amazing number of people using Google Voice. It certainly would be a huge boost to their bottom line if they did start charging people. On the other hand, I don't know that Google needs that money as much as they need the other things that are provided by the service that they're offering. So if they feel that they're gaining more by offering this free service, then they won't charge for it.
Yeah. And it's nice. One of their major features is you hand out one phone number and your cell phone rings, your office phone rings, your home phone rings, your other phone rings. So all of your phones can ring via one phone number and you just answer the one you're physically closest to.
The thing I love the best is that Google Voice lets me block text message senders. So when I get those spam messages or those political messages, I just block those people and I never hear from them again. It's a thing of beauty.
Yep.
It's a thing of beauty. And I really like that feature. I wish my real phone had it. I probably can buy it, but Google Voice does it for free. So I don't give people my real number anymore. I just give them my Google number.
Yep. And you get transcriptions on the internet, on your Google internet too.
Yeah. Mostly, and they're pretty good. Sometimes they're just kind of humorous. I have some friends who mumble a lot more. Our Chandra on the IRC chat says, I think maybe Sprint is subsidizing Google Voice in part because Sprint is using Google Voice as their voicemail. Yeah. Pretty cool stuff, I got to say. The stuff you can do with Google Voice programmatically astonishes me.
The text messaging we've got here at the Jazz Station comes through Google Voice.
Yep. I use it all the time. I actually wrote a reminder program for myself, so I can put in a reminder and when I want it to come to me, and then at Google Voice, and then it sends it to me over Google Voice. So I get reminders on my cell phone when I decide I need them. It's very, very cool. Listen, we're going to take a quick break. You need to join us. It's 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free. 1-800-790-0415. And you can be part of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We are Sound Bites. And we will be back right here. It is 19 minutes after the hour on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
I like that song. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Henry.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites. You're going to love this one.
Oh, okay.
The IEEE, the Institute of Electrical and Electronics Engineers, who you think would know better, has had a data breach, and 100,000 usernames and passwords were exposed. You'd think that people who are technologically proficient would have learned by now, but that seems to not be the case. Romanian researcher Radu Dragusin reports the data from the Institute of Electrical and Electronics Engineers, the IEEE, was kept on an unsecured FTP server for at least 1 month previous to his discovery. Yeah, exactly. Though he's not releasing the raw data, he's found some interesting points in his own parses. IEEE, for background, has about 400,000 members, made up of largely big technology names. As evidence of that, Dragusin reports that there were logins for employees of companies like Apple, Google, IBM, Oracle, and Samsung. Oops.
Wait a minute.
Yeah. But the story gets even more interesting when we look at the data points that Dragusin has made public. For instance, many members of the IEEE choose terrible passwords. Combinations such as 123456.
They don't listen to our show.
123456789 and password were all common, with literally hundreds of instances each of their use. The breach affected users across the globe, and many of the passwords belong to users within technology hotbeds. The danger here is that the data were available for an extended period of time, and with the combination of usernames and passwords, it wouldn't be too difficult for the right people to do some non-elaborate phishing attempts or to simply brute force their way into other logins. Particularly if you were even stupider than using 123456 as your password and use that same password in other places. But the reach extends far beyond just FTP passwords. In fact, over 100 gigabytes of server logs were available, showing every move made on the IEEE blog. To say that this is a disappointment would be a pretty huge understatement. The full report is fascinating, and you should take some time to read it. But the two salient points are simple enough. Choose good passwords and secure your servers. Someone is always watching. Is your password sufficient? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, or, of course, toll-free, 1-800-790-0415.
You know, I guess I shouldn't say it still amazes me, but, you know, I've told stories, too. You know, we've gone into companies and picked out passwords very easily. you know, yep. being taped to the bottom machines or, you know, or the keyboards or in a drawer. I mean, common places that, you know, he looked, but in guessing. Now, like I went to one company and this guy had Porsche's posters all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
Gee, guess what password I picked out?
Yeah.
Because I was sitting there and he goes, he comes by because he wasn't there and we were doing some updating. He goes, "What? Don't you need my password?" I said, "I already got it."
There we got it. I had that experience when I took a temp job. They said, "Oh, you have to update McAfee on everybody's machine." This is long before the days of auto updating over a network.
Mm-hmm.
And then they all went to lunch without giving me any of the admin passwords, thinking, "Ha ha! And when we come back, you'll be frustrated."
Yeah.
When they came back, I had done all but two offices. I had the same experience you had. A guy had a giant poster, Porsche 911, on his wall. I tried Porsche. That didn't get me in. I tried Porsche 911. That got me in. People had pictures on their desk, you know, two Snookums from Honey Bun. Snookums didn't work, but Honey Bun did. People would put their passwords underneath their keyboards or on the monitor, which actually insulted me. At least make it hard for me.
Yeah.
People would put it on the inside wall of the drawer. You know, if you pull out the drawer, the wall that's against your leg, thinking that's a private place. No one will look there.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, like I said, there were only two offices I had not done. One, I honestly could not figure out the person's password. And the other one, I just hadn't gotten to yet. None of the passwords were really good. And passwords should be long. They don't have to be, well, they need to be complex in the technical sense that they should have upper and lower case numbers and symbols. But they don't have to be difficult. We have trained ourselves to prefer passwords that are difficult for humans to remember and easy for computers to break. And instead of, you know, 4!J3257_4, it was the best of times, it was the worst of times, with no spaces. Mm-hmm. Even with spaces. Computers don't get that. They just get that there's text. It might take you an extra half a second to type in, oh, wee, wee, wee.
Yeah.
But
till they have stuff stolen or, you know, their privacy invaded.
Well, even then, they'll take 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 and make it 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Like that is going to be better.
Yeah.
All right, to the phones. Our first caller is Joe from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Joe. What's your question?
Good afternoon. I was picking up, or I'd like to revert back to the discussion about cell phones versus landlines, if you would.
Yeah.
The only reason I have a landline is for the security system in the house. And you got me interested when you were talking about Google Voice and the interconnect there. And I'd love to get rid of the landline because I have a dial-in to the security center.
Right.
And I'm interested to know if there's any devices out there that allow me to use the internet to do the call-in, if you will, to the security service center.
Wait a minute. I mean, my security center put in a device that if the landline goes dead, it's got a transmitter that bumps up to a satellite.
I did not know that. Is there another alternative? Are there what I'll say over-the-counter devices you can?
Well, the problem with all of these devices is the power requirement. One of the things that makes landlines secure is the fact that they provide their own power. So even if the power in your house goes out, you can still make a phone call, which means that even if someone cuts the power to your house, you can still get that signal out. Now, unless you have the sort of thing Dave has, they can also cut your landline. But if, for example, on Dave's system, then he's got a battery backed up thing that goes to the satellite. And if you have that, then you're in good shape. So an over-the-counter thing, I don't know. I know that there are things provided by the vendor.
Right. My vendor, yeah, there's a battery in there. It looks like a battery, say, like out of a, I want to say out of a motorcycle. It's small, and it hooks it up there. So that chart, you know, and it, it's got a trickle charger on it, so it keeps it charged. And I think they're good for like, I think 4 years, 3 to 4 years, and then they come out and change it, you know, and they get me for a nominal fee on that. But that is the backup in case the landline does go down, but there's a unit in there that sits up in this one wall, my north-facing wall, and it's got an antenna on it. And it'll transmit out there to if there's something goes wrong. You know, if, say somebody cuts my phone line.
Right.
That's the whole thing with the security system, that if they cut the phone line.
Yeah, you're dead.
Yeah.
Is that an RF connection, or what is that?
It's a satellite connection, so it's got to be some form of data.
Yeah, I don't know, because that, all I know is it's up in this one room, and the wires go down to the main control box.
Okay.
So how that's all set up with the...
It's got to be RF, because it's got to hit a satellite somewhere.
Yep.
So that, my route is to contact my service group.
But yeah, because what happens, like I was saying, though, you throw up to them, what happens if my phone line was cut? How do I notify you folks?
Right.
There's got. I'm almost thinking you could do away with the landline, because I bet you there's already some other type of backup already in place.
Not on this system.
You could replace the landline system with the satellite system.
Right.
Right. I mean, that would actually be. That would certainly be cheaper than both.
Yeah.
And would actually be better, because now there's no. There's nothing to cut. I mean, they can't even.
Yeah. They got to be in the house.
Right.
Okay.
All right.
That sounds like a good solution.
All right.
Thank you.
Good luck, Joe.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
We, for years, had a very specialized security system. And we still have it, of course. It's not our only security system, but we have two very large, very well-trained dogs who let us know not only when people are at the door, but when baby strollers are going by and leaves are blowing and the cats are sitting on the chairs outside looking in at the dogs, daring them to come in, to come out. But they do protect us very, very well. All right, our next caller is Larry from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Larry. What's your question?
How are you?
Peachy, how are you?
Peachy as well. I was calling about the previous caller's question about security systems.
Yeah.
Simple solution is to switch vendors. I've had Vivint, which is V-I-V-I-N-T,
right,
for 5 years, and they're cellular primary only.
Ah.
They don't even depend on any wires. There's a cellular transmitter in the box, and it's monitoring all the time, and it dials out if you have an alarm.
Nice.
And it's a couple dollars more than some of the other ones. I think we pay like $48 a month.
Right.
And but anyway, it works flawlessly, and there's no external antennas or anything. In fact, our box, like most, is mounted in the basement, and it's got a plastic case instead of a metal case, and there's a battery backup in it, and it just works flawlessly.
That's excellent. I'm glad to hear it. I'm sure that there are several companies that do that, and so.
I think AT&T just came out with cellular. Some of them had a cellular backup option.
Right.
But this company's is cellular only. They don't, it's not a backup. That's the primary connection.
Right. I will say that I like the idea of the satellite better, because if, for example, another event happens, like when the entire East Coast blacked out, the cell phone towers will go too.
Most of them all have their own battery backup systems.
For a while, they have some battery backup, yes. Now, that's true, now they do. So, one or the other, but it'll be interesting, I think, to me, to see where people go in the future. Because we're depending more and more and more on the cellular network.
Yep.
And there's going to come a point where we start overwhelming it, because while there certainly are enough towers and access points and bandwidth to handle most of the traffic we've been seeing, we see that places like AT&T had to drastically increase their number of towers when iPhone traffic came in. They were simply unprepared for people to use the phones they were selling them.
The AT&T network is what Vivint uses.
right. And except that they've built up their network considerably now. And Verizon and Sprint built theirs up prior to introducing smartphones. And so they're in somewhat better shape. But the reality is that in every case, those networks can be overwhelmed. And in fact, we've seen that when disasters strike nowadays, everybody pulls out their cell phones and half of them get busy signals. At 9/11, I was out of town. I was actually in Philadelphia, and I called my wife to reassure her that the plane that crashed in Pennsylvania was nowhere near me. Couldn't get through. Absolutely could not get through.
And landlines get overwhelmed like that, too.
And landlines were gone. There's no way you were going to get through on a landline. I couldn't get through on the cell phone.
Yeah, but most people are, you know, either 3G or 4G phones now, and I'm sure what they have down there is a, you know, plain old cellular telephone, a 1G, and it's transmitting such a small slice of data, basically. Yep. Just, you know, its own. Well, that, ID number,
I agree with you, but if it can't get through,
which door, which okay. window was alarmed?
And that was
right,
the problem.
But even so, if it can't make the connection, it can't send the data.
And that was one of the problems with the early OnStars.
Right.
It was a big story a year or so ago that everyone who bought OnStar in their car to begin with would quit working because it was all analog cell phones, and
right.
it was hundreds of dollars to retrofit your car with a digital cell phone.
Right.
Yeah, my car has an analog cell phone built into it that came with it, but that, you know.
Right.
It's useless now. Well, actually, it isn't useless. There's still analog service.
Right.
But you pay a lot for it.
Right.
But the reason I keep it in is, well, it would be impossible. Not impossible, but hard to take out. But right. like any cell phone, even if it's not active, it can still call 911.
Right. That's exactly right.
So,
assuming that the tower is not overwhelmed. And that's the problem we're all facing nowadays. We are rooted more and more to our cell phones in hundreds of different ways. And if the cell phone is unable to connect...
Oh, I understand.
We're kind of lost, you know?
I'm sure when the even landline telephones were built, they expected, you know, less, what, 50% of potential customers to be using it at any given time, so
yeah.
they don't need to support all the customers. So when there is a national emergency, you know, breaking news or, you know, something like that, and everyone tries to phone at once, they know it's going to break down because it's not built to handle every possible potential call.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's other things on cell phone, too, like initial paging channel.
Right, right. All of that stuff as well. Listen, we got to go.
Yeah, all right.
Thanks. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour, and after this break, you should join us. We are the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Dennis from Rochester on the line. Welcome, Dennis. What's up?
Hi, guys. I have a question about backup, which you guys were talking about last week, but first I'd like to make a comment on the security system thing. Most any security company, I used to do that sort of thing. I haven't done security. I'm doing something else right now. But most any company will do voice over IP with cellular backup, will do landline with cellular backup. You just have to, if you're willing to pay, they'll do it for you.
Good. Excellent. Good to know. Thank you.
Okay. Windows has... a backup program, Windows 7, I'm speaking specifically of.
Right.
Is it any good?
I wouldn't rely on it. It's Windows.
But, you know, it's better than nothing, but that ain't saying much.
Yeah, really. Cobain is a very good one.
It's Cobian.
Cobian.
But yeah, we had someone in the forums last week. Cobain was a grunge rocker. Cobian is the backup program.
That's a very good one.
You know
one.
How Dave loves his grunge rock.
Yeah.
Yeah, Rob keeps... telling me I can't play it Thursday night.
Unbelievable, isn't it?
It doesn't cut me.
But Cobian is a good backup program. The other one,
are they free or you pay for monthly or you buy the program?
It depends on the thing. Carbonite is $5 a month.
And that's an off-site internet-based backup.
I don't know what Cobian costs.
I think it was free. But that's a local backup. Okay. And many times it's good to have both. You have your local backup for quick restores, but then, you know, if there's a fire, flood, theft, you lose your computer and your local backup drive, so it's good to have an off-site backup too.
Yeah. What I want to do is I want to have a full image of the operating system and everything that will be on another, that I can put on another hard drive or flash drive or whatever, so that I can just go back to where I was.
Ghost is a good one.
Yeah, that's, then you need a cloning program like Ghost. But since Symantec bought them, I don't like it anymore.
Yeah. And again, here's the thing. You're no offense, but you're wasting a lot of time, in my opinion, is because usually once a machine dies or something happens to it, 10 to 1 odds you're going to want to start from scratch again because, like most folks, they haven't been using Revo 1 installer to add and remove programs from their machines as they've been added, so the registry has gotten quite large. So if you restore it, you've got that huge registry.
Yep.
Now, whereas if you just back up your data, install the program, everything, the operating system and the programs fresh, now the registry is nice and small. You put Revo uninstaller on there as the next piece, before you put any other software on there, besides the operating system. Mm-hmm. Now it'll track what you install, Office or any of your other programs, and you use that to uninstall it. That keeps the registry smaller and your machine running far more efficiently.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that depends if you want a fast backup or a fast restore.
Right, and the reality is, though, that backing up your entire system means you're taking all your old mistakes with you.
But it does give you a fast restore to get things up and running again fast.
Right.
A lot of businesses will do something like that because business critical, they need as little downtime as possible.
On the other hand, if what causes you to need the restore is a broken computer and you buy a new computer, the likelihood that the image will work correctly is very low.
Because of the driver issue.
Because of the driver issues. So you would have to reinstall the operating system anyway. Now you got to figure out how to go through the image and get back all your data.
Okay.
It becomes actually harder to do that than it does to just back up your data. And when you buy the new machine, reinstall your programs and go from there.
Well, not to keep you guys on the line, but I want to do both. I want to do just backup of system files. I use my computer for business purposes. I need a fast backup in case of certain situations. I realize I can't take that image and put it on a different machine or whatever, but if something happens and I lose...
Well, you can also put it in addition. If you've got a RAID motherboard in there, you can set up another hard drive.
But if the board, if it's the whole drive array goes, if
RAID isn't really a backup.
As far as cloning it.
Right, but here's the thing you probably should do. If you are talking about backing up, you're really talking about backing up in two different scenarios, right? One is you want your whole machine backed up.
Yes.
The other one is you want the data backed up in case you have to buy a new machine.
Correct.
So use Carbonite, because it's for your business. It's a business expense, $60 a year. Use Carbonite to back up all your data.
Okay.
Use Ghost to back up your entire system to a DVD.
Okay. Is there any other... now, Dave says he doesn't like it because Symantec bought it.
But there are a couple of other programs like it, but that's a pretty good one.
Okay. Okay. All right.
CloneZilla will do it. Archandra says CloneZilla will do it. He's absolutely right. That's free. Ping is another one. Annoyed says Ping. Ping is not Ghost. Is a nice one. It's also free. Take a look around at those. Carbonite or Carbonite for business, which is a little more expensive but a little more flexible. The folks in the IRC chat are having some pretty good answers there.
I got Clonezilla and Carbonite, and did you say another one or two?
Well, for online backup, Carbonite or Mozy backs up to Amazon S3.
Right.
There's quite, in fact, if you, Security Now did a security related podcast on the online backup systems, and Carbonite and Mozy were among the best for. From a security standpoint, because you have the keys yourself, they can't decrypt your data at the other end.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Okay, that's great. Thanks for your help, guys.
There you go. I completely commend Dennis and, in fact, everybody who's doing backup, because while it makes less work for you guys,
yeah.
It's the right thing to do. The reality is that my heart breaks whenever a student comes to me and says, my thesis is on here, and I can't retrieve it. And I say, well, where's your backup? And they say, I don't have a backup.
No one told me I needed a backup.
Yeah, no one told me
we hear that all the
backup.
Time.
Right, all right. Well, that's right. Don't take any personal responsibility, because you're a college student. Anyway, here's the thing. The more you back up, the better off you are. And backing up in multiple places is even better. I do that. I back up to a server on my network, and I back up on the cloud, and then that gets put on a tape. So I do a number of backups. I am a belt and suspenders guy when it comes to backups.
Well, again, it's how important your data is
to
you.
That's exactly right. That is exactly right. And I think that having multiple backups is the right way to go. And I suspect that backing up your entire hard drive, including the system area, by using Clonezilla or Ghost or one of those, is something you will probably never really use unless you just decided, I need to clean this machine up, and the easiest way to do it is to pull a backup and then put it back. But putting it back, like I said, always brings over all, it drags your old mistakes behind you. That's why, yep, I always suggest, if you're looking to clean up your machine, start with a clean image of the operating system.
You got it.
Install Revo Uninstaller, then install everything else you need, and go from there. But if you really feel that you absolutely have to drag all of your mistakes with you, then a cloning program makes for a faster restore.
Another suggestion for him, he's looking for offsite backup, is Google Drive. I mean, for, yep, saving any documents, images, pictures and all that type of stuff. I mean, there's another free one, and I love it because no matter where I'm at, even on my cell phone, I can get to my Google Drive and look up any document or picture or anything else. Because it's there.
Yeah, I write almost everything in Google Docs.
Google, I just, you got me hooked on that.
See?
Google Docs. And again, I love
it. Like your pusher. From the day I helped you install the cable network, the system that got you off
me onto the internet,
dial up, ever since then, I tell you something, you get on it, and the next thing I know, you're addicted to it.
Oh, I am. I mean, on my tablet, that's the way everything. Yeah, Google Docs. And again, it doesn't use any space.
Yep. If you actually write the documents in Google Docs, and that includes word processing documents, spreadsheets, and presentation documents, as long as you actually write them in the format of Google Docs, it doesn't take up any space on Google Drive. So you get 5 gigabytes, but you may never actually use that. I've got thousands of documents in Google Docs, and the only space I have used is for 3 PDFs that are up there.
I've even taken some of my documents, selected it all, copied it, and then opened up Google Docs, pasted in there, then I delete the other file, and it's just saving that much more room.
That's
and
exactly
again,
right.
I, I've got some images up there. So I maybe used 2.5 gig.
Right.
Because I've got a lot of photos in it, that are precious to me, and I want them backed up. Granted, I've got some to the CD, but,
it's just not as bad to have a few extras.
Yeah, exactly, because they're very important to me.
Yeah. Art Chandra on the IRC network also cautions people, and he's absolutely right about this, against doing what I do as their sole backup, which is back it up at work, right? Because what happens if you get laid off, you get fired, the company goes out of business? If that's your sole backup, it's not a very good backup. Okay, our next caller is Henry from Brighton, New York. Welcome, Henry. What's your question?
Just wanted to ask, what do you think of Dropbox?
It's very convenient, it's very popular, and it's completely insecure.
So that's the issue, security.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they keep beefing it up, and other people keep breaking it. It's not a bad thing, and the reality is that if you're not using it for anything super secure.
Yeah.
And there are some interesting add-ons. You could even use TrueCrypt to make an encrypted disk image on your Dropbox, and then it's secure because you have the key. The big issue with the security is Dropbox has the key. So they can decrypt your files anytime they want.
I don't know why they'd want to, but they could.
But in response to a subpoena, they will decrypt your files and hand your files over to law enforcement. Where some of the other companies where you have the key yourself, they cannot decrypt it because you have the key at your end. There's even a couple of little utilities that will go out to all of the other free programs. And I got a cough coming on. Excuse me.
Steve has been catching a little something, and we're all not breathing near him.
Yeah. I got to find the disinfectant for the microphone when I'm done here. That's from the hands. That'll work too, yeah. But there's a couple of programs that go out to all of the free services. Dropbox gives you 2 gigs for free. Google gives you 5 gigs for free. Microsoft gives you 7 gigs for free. And it will combine all of those free services together and give you 50 gigs for free.
Yep.
By using all the 20 free services. Security Now did a podcast where they covered all of that a couple of months ago. All the different cloud storage solutions. If you search for Security Now cloud storage, you'll find it. And they look at it from a security standpoint on what's secure, what's the best practices for keeping your file secure as well.
Yeah. Okay. So security is the issue, really, for Dropbox.
Right. Really, yeah.
All right. Thank you.
Yep.
Bye.
Yeah, there are lots of places that will give you a certain amount of free storage. We love the idea of that. I think it's a great thing, except you do have to pay attention. And the convenience of having all your stuff up online, as Dave said, is wonderful. But you do have to be very careful if you're doing anything. For example, if you're creating a startup company or that sort of affair, you want to be very careful what you put online, what of your corporate secrets you're giving away before you become an established organization.
There was a new one that someone just told me about. I'm looking into MediaFire. They give you 50 gigabytes free, which sounds too good to be true.
Yeah.
And I've been looking into it. From what I can tell, it's not easy to share your data with someone else if you want to, which is usually what people want. They want private storage. I've been looking at some of these for the users group where we want to share our files with our other members. So that's sort of the trade-off. If you want to share files, you know, Dropbox is really easy to share files, even when you don't want to. And then something like MediaFire, which claims to give you 50 gigabytes for free, just have to dig around and figure out what they're actually doing to that to do and what their terms of service are. So that's another interesting option I've been reading about.
Right. I've been interested in online storage. The other thing I love about Google Docs is the collaboration. When I am working with somebody long distance, we can edit the same document simultaneously, and that's beautiful. Even if we're in different time zones, I can do some editing, the other person can do some editing, blah, 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 and we see each other's edits immediately. So I really like that part about it. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. You seem to have gone through an entire hour of this show. You are strong. You are strong and you are brave. But now you get to prove how strong and how brave by coming back for the next hour, which we will see on the other side of these very important messages. And then you're going to have a whole lot more of Sound Bites with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 59 minutes after the hour.
And we are the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We are Soundbites on the truly great and truly member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Got a computer question? Call the boys now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll-free 800-790-0415. Online at soundbites.org. Soundbites continues next on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 3 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Now, we had a request during the break from the IRC chat. The doctor would like us to talk about the six-strike rule and what it's going to mean here in the United States. Well, basically what happens is the major United States Internet service providers and major copyright stakeholders, including the MPAA and the RIAA, two of our favorite acronyms, announced that they were implementing a six strikes regime of copyright alerts and mitigation. Basically, what happens is they will send you a series of up to six copyright alerts to any account holders who are being accused of some sort of copyright infringement. The first four or five alerts are warnings, but on the fifth or sixth alert, depending on if the ISP waived taking action on the fifth alert, various mitigation measures are implemented, including limiting download speed, halting access until the customer makes contact with the ISP. So if, for example, you decide you cannot live without the latest Danger Mouse download, the ISP catches you doing it, or the RIA or the MPAA, one of those catches you doing it. It will be the RIA in this case. You get a notice. Stop stealing copyrighted material. Second time, you get a notice. Stop stealing copyright material. Third, fourth time, you get the same notice. The fifth time for some ISPs, but not until the sixth time for others, they can just simply cut you off the internet.
They could also just
slow down your downloads, but they could just simply cut you off of the internet until you make contact with the ISP, and from there on, it depends on what happens. There's an appeals process, but there's a fee that goes along with that and everything else. So as we're seeing now, that actually, I believe, starts tomorrow morning, I think. And so if you are one of those people who steals music, or steals movies, or steals, in fact, any copyrighted material of any sort, including programs. Starting tomorrow, internet service providers will be checking and will more than likely start sending out those notices. So I suppose you can ignore the first three or four, but then you're marked. And if you do it again, you're probably
throwing up a flag against yourself, and then exactly you're going right. to get. I would assume, like you say, they send the notice out, but you're going to be put on some type of list.
Well, yeah. And what's interesting, I guess scary is sort of the right word to rights activists, is that there's no check and balance. A media company can send a notice to Time Warner saying this person is stealing movies. They don't have to prove it. They just have to say that it's happening, and Time Warner says, okay, that's strike one.
Yep.
Up until now, the ISPs have required, in most cases, a court order to release information on who at a certain IP address. Because the only thing that the copyright holders can know is the IP address of who downloaded a file. They don't know the person's name.
Right.
And in most cases, you know, it's a household full of people. So it would go to the person whose name is on the internet service provider bill.
Right.
Which may not have been the person doing it.
Right. Again, the proof of burden falls on the consumer. You have to pay $35 just to have the strike reviewed. It's guilty until proven innocent, which many of us do not particularly care for. It also relies on the IP address, which is, as you said, highly unreliable.
And easily spoofed anyway.
And easily spoofed. So, you know, if you're doing it over Wi-Fi connection sharing, there's really no way of knowing for sure if the person behind the IP address is really the person that pays for the connection, or if the service provider is even aware of what's going on with their own IP address. That's another reason to make sure that you have a protected wireless connection.
That's what I was going to say. Somebody's sitting out in your driveway.
Leave your Wi-Fi open so you have plausible deniability.
And that's another way to think about it. Thank you, Mr. Ray. Very, very nice.
Ignorance on that is not an excuse.
Yeah, you have to prove it wasn't you. And simply saying it could have been anybody is not proof.
Yep.
Right. And like you say, you know, I mean, and you can go, and we've said it before here, that you can go around to so many places and they could be sitting even across the street and tapping into your internet and you're going to get blamed.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they can hang you out to dry.
In some other countries, and in the first few versions of this issue, it was three strikes. Three strikes and you're out.
And France and New Zealand and places like that do have three strike rules.
They cut you off from the internet forever.
Yep.
Which
ours is at least more lenient. There's six strikes and you can get back on. So there's an appeals process. An interesting problem. What happens if you know, and of course these things, this is why God made lawyers and why they're richer than we are. What happens if you go to, for example, YouTube? And you view a YouTube, which is later deemed to be copyright infringement and taken off the web, are you still liable for a notice? I didn't go anywhere bad. Right. I went to YouTube.
Which I would think YouTube's going to have to watch their content to make sure that there's nothing.
Well, they always have, they don't catch it instantly.
And that happens a lot, too. I listen to a lot of podcasts, one of them, This Week in Tech. It's a news show. They will play clips from YouTube as news stories and comment on them, and then their own video feed gets pulled off of YouTube for copyright infringement.
Right.
But that's fair use. We're news. We're talking about it. That's supposed to be fair use. They can appeal, but by then it's too late.
Right.
They're
toast. And how many times have you gone to a website, a legitimate website, again, a news website that says this content, and instead of getting a video, you get this content pulled because of copyright infringement? Well, what if you had seen that there? Are you then liable? I went to, go.com. Well, that's ABC, so that probably that's, you know, they know what they're doing. But
I would almost think, no, the person, you know, where
well,
it
but
is.
I know.
It's going to be a slippery slope.
There have been a lot of cases where people have uploaded stuff to YouTube and there happens to be a radio playing in the background. You've committed copyright theft. You are redistributing someone else's song.
Yep.
Just because there happened to be a radio playing in the background.
Yep.
Yep. I had an argument this week with someone who plays the radio in their place of business. And that's copyright
illegal.
Violation.
Yep.
The music company will come along and sell you a legal subscription service, but you can't just play the radio in your store. There have been a lot of...
you can't play CDs in your store.
There have been a lot of things with sports bars, trying to watch the game in the sports bar. You can't legally do that. You have to pay a license to that sport agency to... have a broadcast right for that.
Yep.
So the copyright lawyers like to go around to sports bars and say, "Do you have a license? We're going to sue you." And then the shady ones will say, "Give us $10,000, we'll settle out of court."
Yeah, right.
And then he goes and tells all his buddies that this guy's violating license, and the next one comes in next week, and And it's the average person doesn't know this type of stuff.
Well, that's exactly right, and that's the public service we provide.
Yep.
And now we're going to go to the phones and provide even more public service by talking to Lynn from Clyburn, New York. Welcome, Lynn. What's up?
You were talking about backup a few minutes ago. Something that I've tried, maybe I heard about it on this program, I'm not sure, quite some time ago, but about 3 years ago, I bought what's called a ClickFree. And it works fabulously, as far as I'm concerned, for local backup. You plug it into the USB port. I don't know what the new iterations are, if there is any new for like USB 3 and so on, but You just plug this little dongle into USB port, plug another cable in, plug that into a backup drive, and the software is in the little dongle.
Yep.
They you don't install anything. It just brings up a dashboard, and it does it, and it works great.
Yep. They also have Android and smartphone versions, too.
I really have liked it. It's so simple.
Yeah, they make excellent products. There's also click-free backup at Amazon.com, and I don't know if it's from the same company. I see. It's just their. I thought it was at Amazon's cloud.
Oh, they're selling it.
Yeah,
One of the things, interesting things about Amazon is that they sell cloud storage, and you pay. It's like pennies per gig. So it's relatively inexpensive, even for companies that have a large amount of storage. And a lot of huge websites are using Amazon as their storage provider. And then you can use a front end like Mozy or Jungle Disk to use Amazon's cloud storage.
Yeah.
But yeah, this ClickFree looks pretty interesting. They sell software as well for your computer. But then they have little backup devices too.
Yeah, and in multiple sizes, 500 gig, whatever you want. Pretty interesting stuff. It's an automated backup hardware and software at clickfree.com. This is interesting. Thanks, Lynn. Very cool stuff.
Yeah, it works. I mean, it's flawless as far as I'm concerned. It even grabs my Thunderbird email, which that's what ask you about. Because is there a way I can pull that off from one computer and save it? I want to reload my system. And other than I can't use this, I don't think. Maybe I could on my machine. But I was going to do it because there's so much. I got so much video on that machine. I was going to use an eSATA connection.
Right.
And pull all the data off and put it on another hard drive. Maybe I'll have to go back and use this.
This would likely work.
But is there an easy way that I could get the Thunderbird, the data that I've already saved, all those emails and all those folders?
Yeah, what happens is Thunderbird saves your email, your settings, everything in what they call a profile, which is really just a folder.
Okay.
A directory.
Is that under Thunderbird all systems or whatever? Yeah, no. X86, I guess that was under.
It depends on what version of Windows you're running, what version of any operating system you're running.
Right.
And a couple of other things, but it's fairly easy to find on Windows. Select Run from the Start menu, type percent... APPDATA%, no spaces, that's percent app data percent. Hit return, you'll see a folder that says Thunderbird. Under there, you'll see a folder called profiles. Something dot default, which is a random number, so I can't tell you what that number is going to be. And there probably will be a folder underneath that, but that
you
should
want the
do
higher
it.
One,
right? On Mac, on OS X, in the Finder, Command Shift G, type /library/Thunderbird/profiles, or you can just go to your home folder, go to the library folder, and open Thunderbird, and then the profiles folder under that.
I have posted a link to all the instructions for all the different web operating systems.
Right. Under Linux, of course, it's .thunderbird directory in your home folder. So,
and just another comment. Thank you for that. But last time I called you, I was talking about some 2-terabyte hard drives.
Yeah.
And I ordered a couple of those, and I lied to you. It wasn't $1.09 for the for those. It was $1.15. But
liar, you.
Good. And anyway, I got them, and I put Windows 7 on my old Vista machine. A complete fresh install. I tell you, that machine works so nice and sweet now.
And you got Revo Uninstaller on it?
Yeah.
What?
You have Revo uninstaller on it?
Yes.
Good man.
Yeah, it's like I
said. The best.
Yeah, it's like I say, I believe that when it's time to reinstall your operating system, you should install it fresh. Install the base operating system, install Revo, do all your updates, then install all your other software, and go from there.
Mm-hmm.
Make a weekend of it.
Yeah, make a weekend of it.
At least.
Pack a picnic lunch, go down to your computer, and just stay there for about 10 hours.
Order out. You know, if have the pizza delivered.
I don't have to worry about that in my condition. I don't have to work anymore because I can't.
There you go. So you have plenty of time to muck about with your computer.
It's the only productive thing I can do.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to learn computers.
There you go.
Well, good for you.
Because I'm older than any of you guys.
Wow. And you can still have the strength to pick up a phone? Nice.
Well, I have to attach a helium-filled balloon, but... okay, thank you for that information.
All right, thanks, Len.
Yep.
Keep smiling.
And just a comment that has nothing to do with computers.
Yeah.
Our community lost its innocence a week ago. We had, to anybody's knowledge, the first murder in written history.
In Clymer?
Yeah.
Wow.
About 1,500 feet up the road from where I grew up.
Wow. That's a sad.
Sorry to hear that.
The school was murdered.
Yeah, sorry.
Turns out he wasn't apparently quite such a nice guy. If the information we're getting is accurate, he apparently messed around with the wrong guy's wife.
That'll do it.
There you are.
And the
all right, listen, we got a
green.
Yeah, yeah.
But thanks, guys, and...
All right, thanks, Lynn. Keep smiling, will you?
I'll try.
All right, thanks. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll come back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 19 minutes after the hour, and for no discernible reason, you continue to listen to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here in member-supported Jazz 90.1.
He's here when he's not.
Exactly right. It's all about Rob. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. One rumor that was nearly forgotten amid the iPhone 5's launch and iOS 6 media circus was that Apple was reportedly looking to release a Pandora killer soon. The streaming music service would be a natural next step in the progression Apple's taken with digital music, but it looks like licensing issues may have stepped in the way once again. Music publisher Sony ATV wouldn't agree to Apple's proposed terms, seeking more in terms of a per-song rights fee from the tech industry leader to provide access to its content library for a streaming service. Sony ATV is part of ASCAP and BMI copyright associations that normally handle licensing rights for publishers, but sources claim Apple had to go direct to Sony ATV because of the nature of its service, described as a souped-up streaming service. I don't know what souped up means. That service would reportedly be Pandora. Shouldn't it be iStreaming? Anyway, that service would reportedly be like Pandora, offering personalized radio streams, but with an added element of promotion based on what music labels are pushing in any one month. Yeah. Alongside the bump in the road for Apple comes news that Sony ATV is about to leave ASCAP and BMI, which could mean that existing services like Pandora and others lose access to their libraries as well, which covers 2 million copyrights, including some top artists. The planned Apple Music service was reportedly intended to accompany the iPhone 5's launch. There could be some truth to that, as Apple notably didn't include any iPhone 5-specific software features, which didn't also get provided to the iPhone 4S via iOS 6. In its release, something that we've seen happen in the past with the iPhone 4S, 4, and every other earlier incarnation of the same phone. The report claims we'll still likely see a streaming Pandora competitor eventually released from Apple as an update down the road, but there's no timeline mentioned, and it'll likely depend on how licensing negotiations go from here on out. What would you think of a Pandora-like service from Apple? Give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ, that's 966-5299, or of course, toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
What's annoying is that they already have a license to sell the music on the iTunes Store.
Right.
They need a different license to stream the music.
It's the way it works. Yep. I can't help you there.
Yeah.
I use Pandora fairly regularly and like it. I also use Spotify. Theosis is talking about that in the IRC chat.
And RDO and Mog, and there's dozens of them.
There's dozens of them. I tend to use both Pandora and Spotify, depending on what I'm looking for, and they're pretty nice. But there's a million of them. TuneIn, there's radio stations you can get online, and
yeah, there's so many of them.
This one, by the way,
you can make your favorites list, and you know have those radio stations right there as a tab, and you know. Depending on your mood, you can quick click to either one of them.
FM, yep. Yeah, that's another one. There's a bunch of them out there. I'm trying to think of the one that I use in addition. I'm not going to be able to find it. Doesn't matter. Pandora is the one I use here on my phone. There's a couple of different ones I use on the tablet. And it's like $10 a month or something for a couple of these, like Spotify, $10 a month for a higher stream. And I guess it depends on whether you center your entertainment needs around iTunes or not, as to which one of these you would prefer. You know, if you prefer to get everything through iTunes, then an iTunes streaming service would be very useful to you. If you're already on a streaming service, I can't imagine why you would change.
Well, that's sort of the difference in mindsets. With iTunes, you buy the music, it downloads it, and you have it forever. With streaming services, you pay to listen to music, and you don't necessarily have a copy yourself.
Right.
The thing about Pandora and Spotify and all the others is that when you're listening to a song, there's usually a buy button that will send you either to iTunes or Amazon or somewhere where you can buy the track and keep it for yourself.
Right.
The advantage of a streaming service is that you can listen to millions of songs that you don't have to buy, and you might discover music that way that you wouldn't have necessarily seen.
It's the big thing I like about Pandora. When I listen to a genre or an artist, they not only give you that genre, they not only give you, for example, that artist, but they also give you others in the same genre, so that I often get exposed to new music. I found some great artists that way that I never would normally have listened to. Or have found, right? I mean, I would listen to them. I just hadn't found them. And so because of that, I find lots and lots. Really, Pandora is ruining my entertainment budget because I buy a lot of CDs based on Pandora. And I'm sure the Pandora is very happy to hear that, and so are all of their licensees. But that's the way it works for me. I listen to Pandora, and I hear a dozen artists I know, and then three, two, one even that I don't know. Write it down. Go listen to more of their stuff. Oh, yeah, I really have to buy this stuff.
I've got the XM in the car, and I also have it on the web. So even on my tablet, I can put my headset in. If I've got Wi-Fi near me, I can start the app up and listen to it. And again, there, you know, you can go by artist, or you can go by, that artist, and you can have it search. It'll search all the channels. If that artist is playing on a particular channel, they'll quick switch over to it for you. You can make up a whole list of that. Plus, you can make a whole list of the various stations that you like to listen to. And that's, you know, from A to Z. You know, all types of music, whether it's opera right on up to jazz, you know, in this station.
From ABBA to ZZ Top.
Mm-hmm.
Very good. Very good.
There you go. Yeah, exactly.
I tell you, I listen to a lot of different things.
And we do just to interrupt a lot you of for
different
a
music players.
There's the app. We should also tell folks the app for their phone for Jazz 90.1. So if they're out on the road, they can listen to sound bites with them.
That's exactly right. You can take us on the road with you.
When I was out in the other room, the monitor wasn't up loud enough to hear the show, so I was streaming it.
I turned it down in the other. Other office because there's a knob on the wall. You can turn it up so you can hear it in there. But I turn it off just so we don't because of the delay.
The echo across the hall. Yeah,
the delay can be confusing if we open and close the door.
Right, but I tell you, there's I tend to listen to Pandora more than the rest. But there are a bunch of good ones out there, and I stream. Well, again, thank heaven for grandfathering, I'm still unlimited. So I listen to it all day long.
I probably shouldn't say this working on a radio show, but I hardly ever listen to the radio anymore between podcasts and audiobooks and actually listening to music is very, very low. Because I'm at work all day and morning drive time, there's no music on anymore.
Right.
So that I listen to my podcasts.
That's one of the problems with stations like this that are member supported. If we played ads, it wouldn't be a problem. But because we're member supported, we actually rely on people who are actually listening to the radio.
Yep.
And fewer people are doing that.
But those that are much more involved.
Much more involved and clearly smarter, better looking, sexier, and have cleaner teeth. Yeah, the members of Jazz 90.1, as opposed to the rabble who is not a member.
Right.
So to all our members, thank you and congratulations for your discerning and intelligent choices. And for those of you who are not, clearly
get off the stick and become members.
You'll get there. You'll become members soon. I know you will.
Mm-hmm.
And then you too will be better looking, cleaner teeth, sexier, healthier, happier. All of the things that you're promised by television commercials but don't really get, you will get.
Is that why Bob is smiling?
Yeah. Because he's a member of Jazz 90.1. That's exactly the reason. So, yeah, absolutely.
All natural. All natural radio.
All natural radio.
All the time.
That's us. All natural, all the time. I'm going to read another news item.
Didn't you have another iPhone one there?
I probably did, but let's do something that's not.
Sort of like it.
Yeah, this is sort of like it. This is actually, yeah. Google Chairman Eric Schmidt said Apple should have continued to use Google's mapping application in iOS 6 instead of swapping it out for its poorly received, I think that's fair,
yeah,
poorly received homebrewed replacement. And given the sour reception of Apple's Maps app, he may have been right. But multiple sources familiar with Apple's thinking say the company felt it had no choice but to replace Google Maps with its own because of a disagreement over a key feature, voice-guided turn-by-turn driving directions. Spoken turn-by-turn navigation has been a free service offered through Google's Android mobile OS for years now, but it was never part of the deal that brought Google Maps to iOS, and sources say Apple very much wanted it to be. Requiring iPhone users to look directly at handsets for directions and manually move through each step, while Android users enjoyed native voice-guided instructions, put Apple at a clear disadvantage in the mobile space. And having chosen Google as its original mapping partner, the iPhone maker was now in a position where an arch rival was calling the shots on functionality important to the iOS feature set. This caused Apple, which typically enjoys very tight control over its product, no end of philosophical discomfort. Apple pushed Google hard to provide the data it needed to bring voice-guided navigation to iOS. But according to people familiar with Google's thinking, the search giant, which had invested massive sums in creating those data and views them as key features of Android, wasn't willing to simply hand them over to a competing platform. And if there were terms under which it might have been agreed to do, Apple wasn't offering them. Sources that say that Google, for example, wanted more to say in the iOS Maps feature set. It wasn't happy simply providing back-end data. It asked for in-app branding. Apple declined. It suggested adding Google Latitude. Again, Apple declined. And these became major points of contention between the two companies, whose relationship was already deteriorating for a variety of other reasons, including Apple's concern that Google was gathering too much user data from the app. There were a number of issues in flaming negotiations. And I believe that the problem there was that Google was obtaining those user data, not Apple themselves. There were a number of issues in flaming negotiations, but voice navigation was the biggest, said one source familiar with Apple and Google's negotiations. Ultimately, it was a deal breaker. Have you actually tried Apple's Maps app? If you can find a phone, give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
It's gotten so bad that Tim Cook published an official apology. We're sorry for the problem. Gave directions on how to put the Google Map website back on the phone and said we're working on making it better.
There's a big difference. Steve Jobs would never have apologized for anything.
You're doing it wrong.
Exactly. You're holding it wrong.
You're holding it wrong, yeah.
There actually was, I didn't make this one of our news items because I felt it was a tad more inflammatory than it needed to be. But the headline was actually, when will Apple's Maps program kill somebody?
Well, we've been saying that for, well, for a year now when the logo came out. Let me bring it up here on my screen. The logo for Apple's Maps icon is Apple's campus, one infinity loop, at Interstate 280. Well, if you look at the little line that shows the turn-by-turn directions, it tells you to turn left and fall off of a 20-foot overpass onto Interstate 280.
Yes, it does. Nice. That's really nice.
Yeah.
Well, not only on that, but they were also saying on Google Map, you know, the directions or the navigators in most systems, they're trying to put this law in place. Because right now, it's not giving the correct information, and some of these truckers are getting off at different roads.
On too small a road, yeah.
Or no, what they're happening is the road's not necessarily small, but if they try to go under certain underpasses, the clearance isn't correct for them, and they get stuck.
Yep.
And we've got one of those right here over on Marsh Road.
Yeah.
Client of mine over there, I've been over there a number of times, and there's a truck. He's got to try to turn around because a couple of them realize they can't fit under there. There's others that try, thinking they can, and they don't.
I got to give props to Google for two things. I visit a friend of mine regularly. He is a gunsmith, and so he lives out just the other side of
nowhere.
just if you're at nowhere, you can almost see his house from there.
Just go a little farther.
Yeah, a little farther, and you're at his place. The road ends, then there's his driveway. That's not a lie or a joke. and by the way, by the time you get there, it's a dirt road.
Yep.
So at any rate, if you took Google's directions to his house, it led you. He's at one end of his road. So it leads you to the end closest to him. Unfortunately, many years ago, there was a landslide there, and that end of the road simply doesn't exist. He really is past the end of the road. So you can only get to him from the other side. And so I got there once, and there's an actual button that says report a problem. So I said, there's been an avalanche, and this end of the road no longer exists. When I got home that night, there was a message from Google saying, thank you, we'll look into this. About a month later, I got another message saying, we've reviewed your situation. It is absolutely correct, and we have fixed our maps.
Nice.
Wow.
So the next time I went, it took me the right way to his house. I was flabbergasted. That's some service. That's some serious service. Then this last week, we went to Rockford, Illinois to see our daughter. In a show, she was only phenomenal. She was marvelous, and I say that as a director,
but of course
not as a dad, because I've never lied to her. When I thought she did a crappy job, I told her she did a crappy job, but she didn't. She was unbelievable. And we rented a car in Chicago and drove, and then coming back, it told us it would take 1 hour and 40 minutes, and we ran into the worst traffic. It was like parking. We were parked on this 4-lane highway. And we still got there exactly when Google Maps said we would. It took the traffic into account in telling us how long it would take to get there. I was astounded. Brilliant job, Google. Brilliant job on your maps. I'm very impressed. Going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes, 40 minutes after the hour. Soundbites, member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
What if we got reward?
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites. And speaking of Jimi Hendrix, we'll do this next story.
Yeah.
The iPhone 5 camera may be faulty, showing a purple haze.
Yeah, 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 we know.
And pardon me while I touch this guy. In certain lighting conditions, if you take a picture with the iPhone 5 and there's a bright light that's outside of the frame, you'll see a purple tint come across the image. This is possibly due to the sapphire glass used in the camera's lens. As we all know, sapphire is a purple-bluish gem, and though the purple tint isn't noticeable without that bright glare from an off-screen light, it can really muck up some pictures if the conditions aren't just right. The phone is smart enough, however, to compensate in certain situations. There's also a chance that the purple haze is caused by light overloading the imaging sensor. When the iPhone 5 was announced, Apple never made mention of any optical coatings, which tend to reduce these types of issues with glare.
But they did mention the sapphire crystal.
Yes, but they didn't mention any coating that they put over it, so we don't think there is one. Multiple iPhone 5s have been tested with the same exact result. Luckily, when a source of bright light is actually inside the frame, there is no purple issue. The camera has been tested in both indoor and outdoor light, so there's no difference between natural light or otherwise. Though the issue seems to be more pronounced in artificial lighting conditions when the source is either just off, out of frame, or on the edge of the picture. There have been a few disappointments with the iPhone 5. The Maps app is abysmal, as we said. The aluminum backplate scratches like a cat in heat.
And Phil Schiller says that's normal. When you scratch aluminum, you see the silver color underneath.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, well, so he's doing the Steve Jobs. But Tim is saying sorry about the Maps. But
right.
Schiller said it's supposed to do that.
Well, for that I have to agree with him. It's got an aluminum back. Aluminum scratches. Get over yourself.
Yeah.
Buy a freaking case.
It's like the guy that tried to sue Apple because the glass on his phone broke when he dropped it.
Yeah.
And the judge said, yeah, the glass breaks when you drop it. Go away.
Exactly. Even Panorama. So there's nothing really that special to get excited about in terms of innovation. Even Panorama's been around for a while on Android. They made a big deal about this Panorama thing. I've had that for years. It's just an app. Get over it. There are reports on Twitter that the same issue is true with the iPhone 4S, by the way. They are correct. There is a very slight purple haze on images taken under the same lighting conditions with the 4S. However, it is far more pronounced than the iPhone 5. So that's something new that the iPhone 4S didn't really have.
It's got better purple haze.
It's got better purple haze. More purple. Now with more purple. The purple haze issue was first spotted in an Antec forums where many users are suffering from the same thing. The issue persists, by the way, during video capture. Everyone is still unsure as to what the issue is, but theories range from the fact that Apple changed the noise on the iPhone 5 camera from speckles to smearing, all the way to the camera sensors getting overloaded with infrared. So, do you have an iPhone 5? Have you noticed the problem? Do you even care? Give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll-free, 1-800-790-0415.
Of course, if you like purple, then you may want that as a stylistic effect.
You can't get it on Instagram.
There's an iPhone case with purple haze on it.
There you go. Yeah, a lot of people are now buying iPhone cases. Mainly because of this scratch problem. I bought a case mainly to protect my phone. I guess there's a difference there. Actually, I love this case. It fits into the... Well, no, mine actually makes it fit into the slider, but it's also got a stand. So if I wanted to do... When I do video chatting with my daughter,
okay. Yeah.
I can just set the phone there and talk to her.
That's nice. It's on an angle, yeah.
Yeah, it's great. It's great. It works perfectly.
Hmm.
So, yeah, I've been pretty pleased with that. That's kind of nice. And let me just make sure that that's put back correctly before I put it back in. All right, there we go.
And you don't lose it.
Exactly. So the interesting thing with the purple haze is that it's more pronounced. Now, I don't know why. I guess, as they say, that might have to do with the they've changed from one style of interpreting the ones and zeros that come off the sensor that takes the picture to a different way of interpreting those ones and zeros, and that's causing more purple to appear.
Hmm.
But it really has to come down, I think, to that sapphire lens.
Yeah, I'd say the optical lens.
Yeah, yeah.
They might have to refocus on that. But again, like I was asking you guys offline, you know, what's the real big compelling reason if I had an iPhone, say an iPhone 4, that I'd want to go to a 5?
Yeah, from 4 to 5, there isn't that big of a reason. And from 4S to 5 is even less. But for people that had a 2-year contract with their 3GS and now it's up, or if they had a 4, you get the next better phone.
For how much?
The 5 is $200 with contract, like most of the bigger smartphones. But compared to the other Android phones, yeah, it is stuff that Android has had for a while, but compared to the older iPhones, it isn't. I like some of the commercials Samsung is doing now. They've got the one where you bump phones to transfer. There's apps on the iPhone that do that, but it's not built in. And right. So someone's standing in line, when are we going to have that? Oh, probably the next version.
Yeah, right. Samsung has really done an interesting job with that.
They might be getting cooler. Remember the judge said that they weren't cool enough to have copied Apple, and so Samsung lost that case. But now that they seem to be getting a little bit cooler.
Theosis says he doesn't agree with you. Steve, he's anxious to upgrade his iPhone 4 to a 5 because performance enhancements.
Yeah, it's got a faster processor, so you'll see things running faster and the bigger screen.
But it's a phone.
But it's a phone.
Well, if you make phone calls with it, then it's no big deal.
Right. A phone is a phone.
Phone and texting.
Right. Well, see, it's different for guys like us, Dave, because we use our tablets for all the other stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I use my phone. My phone has gotten much faster with the upgrade. It was faster than an iPhone before. Now it's even faster than it was with the latest upgrade to Jelly Bean. I'm very impressed. And, of course, it's a quad processor and true multitasking, blah, 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 blah. But the reality is that I don't use it the way I used to because I use my tablet for all that stuff now.
And you talked about using the tablets and just stepping back for a second about, you know, listening to so much music. No, I'll sit there and take my tablet up when I go to bed, and I'll sit there and read for a while.
Yep.
Because I got a couple books on there, and it's just relaxes me. You know, like you say, I don't need the distracting noise of the TV or the radio. And that. It's just relaxing just to sit there and read a book till I want to fall asleep, and I can set it over on the nightstand, and boom.
Yep.
It just makes it so it's light.
If I fall asleep reading it, it shuts itself off. Doesn't matter.
And it goes in sleep mode. And I just finally, like I was telling you last week, I finally had to put it on the charger.
Yeah.
It was sitting on standby
forever.
So long. Yeah.
It lasts forever. I took it with me when we took our little trip this week to see my daughter and her show. And from Tuesday at 10 p.m. to Friday at 11 a.m., I still had a third of the battery left.
Yeah.
And I was reading constantly. And I was looking stuff up and doing things. The battery just lasts and lasts and lasts and lasts. It was quite amazing. Quite amazing. And if I want to, I can set my phone into tethered mode.
Mm-hmm.
Not tethering. The other one. Whatever it's
Airplane
called.
Mode?
No. Well, hotspot.
Oh,
thank you. Turn my phone into a hotspot and connect my tablet that way.
There you go.
So I really have three uses for my phone. Texting, actually making phone calls, and hotspot for my tablet.
But, yeah, like you said, though, I mean, and that, you know, for me, going from the old phone that I had to the phone that I've got now, I do a lot of texting and, you know, the phone call. The apps are fine, you know, fun if I'm somewhere and I want to amuse myself. I got a few minutes to kill, you know, the apps and that type of stuff. And there are apps on there that I do use that are convenient, like a shopping list and different calculators and other various programs I've got on there that I use quite a bit.
Oh, and the crossword puzzle app. Holy moly, there's one called Shorties, and I do crossword puzzles regularly. Well, and these are hard.
I use that all on my that type of stuff on my
tablet. My tablet. That's what I'm saying. I do that on my tablet.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And going back to the turn by turn directions for a minute, there's a dozen other apps in the iPhone that do turn by turn directions because Apple never did. Now that it's built into the OS, all those companies have to come up with a different marketing plan or figure out some way to differentiate themselves or make it work. Period. There's a term we joke about in the app world called Sherlocked, in the Apple world, that there was a program written by a guy, I always forget his name, called Sherlock, to search your, called Watson, sorry, to search your computer for stuff. This is like 10 years ago.
Right.
And then Apple came out with a new OS and had a program called Sherlock in it that did, that searched your computer and the internet for all this stuff and just killed this poor guy's business.
Yeah.
And to insult it, they called it Sherlock to his Watson.
Right.
So obviously they were, so when the iOS 6 announcement came out, one of the guys was talking about how many companies got Sherlocked. All of the features that are now built into the operating system that your company depended on, you've got to change your business model now.
Yep, yep. And it's an interesting problem. Apple wants that business for themselves. Google wants that business for themselves. It's part of what they get. Yeah.
Are there other GPS navigation programs on Android?
I haven't really paid any attention to any of them.
Yeah, because Google's
Maps
is so good.
Does it
yeah.
so well. Like I said... Yep. We were in stopped traffic. I mean, we were moving along at a mile an hour and then stop for a minute, move along at a mile an hour and stop for a minute. And it still, it knew exactly how long it was going to take me. Out of a two-hour trip, it knew that that last mile and a half was going to take me 25 minutes.
Yep.
You know, pretty amazing. All right, we are done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. I want to thank everyone who called in. I want to apologize to everyone who we didn't have anybody waiting in the line. So the heck with you. Next week, call in earlier and more often. Chicago-style calling. We'll be back next week with a couple more hours of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We continue to be sound bites on the truly great and truly member-supported Jazz 90.1. Thanks for listening. See you next week.